Audio for the Retro Computing Roundtable is hosted by CyberEars. When you need a rock-solid platform to host and distribute your podcast or other audio media, head over to CyberEars.com. Fast, reliable hosting with unlimited bandwidth. CyberEars is your audio on your terms.
It's April 19th, 2020, and welcome to episode 212 of the Retro Computing Roundtable.
Well, it seems the Emerald City is far behind me now, and my world has changed back from black to white. But no matter where I go, there's just one thing I like to know.
PRCR is a podcast about retro computing news, nostalgia, collecting, staying home, calling 1200 baud New York City BBSs, and so forth. I liked that joke based on the 212, but probably nine people understood what I was saying. Okay. But anyway, I'm Paul Hagstrom in Boston, and I am joined by three other retro computing enthusiasts. To my right is Blake Patterson from Northern Virginia. How are you?
Hello. Doing well. Glad to be here again. Pretty used to sitting at this desk in front of a camera and talking into a mic. Been doing a lot of that lately. But just went for a walk. Very nice outside in Northern Virginia. And so here we are.
Yeah, indeed. And south of Blake is Jack Nutting in Stockholm. How are you?
Hello, I'm good. I've just been sitting playing a computer game all day long, which is pretty rare for me. So that was, it feels like this was a very good day.
Yeah. Which game is that?
Sinking City on the Nintendo Switch. It's a Lovecraftian investigator adventure thing. You're in this weird city that where like half of it is flooded, and you like are exploring weird things and investigating what is up with weird, crazy monsters and stuff.
Sounds interesting. Have to look into it.
Yeah, it's good. It's on most of the platforms, like all the newish consoles and PC also, I think. Probably not Mac, though.
I'll grab the Jaguar version.
Yeah. So we need to get some OS9 ports going.
I bought it for Switch just the other day. It's actually half price, or it was then. I don't know if it's still on sale, but...
Excellent. Nice. And to Jack's West is Carrington Vanston in Toronto. How are you?
Indeed. Doing well. How are you guys? I want to play Sinking City.
So who here got snow? We got snow yesterday.
Really?
Nope.
Okay. Okay. Just me, well, I guess.
Nope.
Just you, Paul. Oh, yeah. In fact, you can kind of see out the window behind me. No snow.
Wow. I guess that's what made me think of it, but I can't see.
Yesterday afternoon, I went out for a walk in shorts, so that's strange.
Ooh. Doesn't mean there wasn't snow. I'm a Canadian. That tells me nothing.
For full transparency, I'll say shorts might not have been the best choice, but still, not snow.
Yes. That's a, shorts is half transparency.
But. There you go.
And we're making hosts. Oh, sorry. We're making hosts.
So the host's topic today, I guess this was not announced on the show here because this happened in between the time we recorded last and the time we are recording now. But Kansas Fest has made the call to be a virtual conference in July. And so there's still kind of announcements coming out about that. But it seemed like it might be a good time to maybe just sort of think a little bit about, you know, in the context of the retro competing events and gatherings and things like that that we go to, that are now going to have to be conducted sort of, you know, not as a gathering, not in person, but in some kind of online way. I thought it might be just kind of interesting to think about, like, what kinds of opportunities we have to do things. I mean, like, part of what I was thinking about was just that, you know, it might be possible to show things that don't travel well, you know, that kind of thing. So I don't know if anybody's had any chance to think about this. I'll pass this off to someone who wants it.
I can go. I haven't thought about that at all, but okay. I think it's interesting. I think that because one thing you could do is you could have someone who has a time slot for having a video stream at their home. Like you said, stuff that it's hard to bring, and saying, here's this thing that I've set up, that I've been working on, that I, you know, would have been hard to haul across the country anyway. Or just to, like, you know, there are probably people in the community who have really nicely displayed collections of things, and just, like, you know, to have sort of like where they're kind of the host and people can ask questions, you know, mm-hmm. like, what is this? What is this thing in your collection? How do you use this thing? What is this about? That kind of thing.
So kind of like a VCF table something analogous to VCF table.
Mm. Yeah. So yeah, you host. Yeah. You have your own table that you're hosting at home. And because it's online, everybody can see it instead of just the people who actually are there in the crowd.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That could be actually pretty cool.
I do like that advantage of the you know, like, there are a lot of, I know I have a bunch of stuff that there's no practical way to bring it, and, you know, I don't want it to get smashed by United or whatever.
Right.
Which I think is their slogan.
Blake, I think you were about to say
something. Yeah, no, I've given it, you know, a little bit of thought. I mean, I guess I've been, as I said on the introduction, I've been doing a lot of, it's sort of coincidental, but we've had at my job, I'm in an IT department, local university, and it was, we do Cold Fusion development. So we've had some online, for like 4 days of 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., you know, online training sessions. So, you know, instead of being in a room, you know, we were doing it from here, which worked well. So I've done, and of course, you know, being, you know, still luckily and happily able to do my job in this time, everything has been online, you know, day to day, for me and the people I work with. But, you know, leaning that away towards the retro, I think, I think Jack had a good notion when you're, like, things like Kansas Fest or what, you know, VCF, there's a lot of things. Like, I actually have been meaning to go to, closer to me than Kansas Fest is VCF East in Wall, New Jersey, and I almost made it a couple of years ago, but, you know, the next year I had an idea, but it was difficult to take the things I was going to take. You know, I think I was going to do a Unix thing with Next and HP or something, but I was thinking, well, am I going to, you know, carrying this? But if you could have a time slot where you set everything up, you know, and you could walk people through in your home, you know, like the machines behind me, you know, that's something that I could easily do. And you could do that at a lot of events, you know, like, it doesn't have to be, I know, you know, there's VCF East, West, North, South, there's others too, I think. But, you know, you're not restricted, you know, geographically. And, you know, being a person that, you know, BBS is, as we talked about in a couple of earlier episodes, one idea I had was, you know, if you had, even specifically for the event, you could set up like here's a BBS that you log into. And, you know, here, this is the transcript from our some presentation, or even an IRC channel, you know, here are notes that are happening while something is going on. You could have, you know, interactive. I could see myself being a big BBS guy. Not that I host one, but I could see myself, you know, setting up something and, you know, this is my table, so to speak, is, you know, BBS. And maybe, so it's some things that it seems like it basically is an opportunity for some new angles. I mean, there's certainly getting together in person and touching the hardware and going to the destination. I mean, I think that's part of it, makes it an event. You know, I haven't been to Kansas Fest, but that sounds like, from what I've heard, you know, the physical presence for the week, it sounds like, you know, that would be hard to replace online. But, you know, it seems like, and then moving forward, it seems as though it could only help if, you know, when we get back to having, you know, traveling to events, to have them augmented by whatever it is that we might have figured out in the meantime. Which, again, I think, you know, stepping back from the retro is the way a lot of the things are going to work professionally in the world, and, you know, moving forward with, you know, electronic conferencing. But
Kansas Fest has historically been very good at that the last few years, having a camera set up during presentations and streaming. So a lot of people who can't attend still get that partial experience. So that's one event that has kind of already been doing a bit of that. I think there's pros and cons to this, many more cons than pros. The one small pro, the little bit of good light, I guess, is that if there's an event that you couldn't go to for whatever reason before, like I wasn't going to be attending Kansas Fest this year for the same reason I wouldn't attend last year. Now I can. Mm-hmm. So in a sense, Kansas Fest suddenly became available to me in a way that it wouldn't have been otherwise. But a lot of people simply can't travel or couldn't travel to a particular place or particular time or immune compromised before this or whatever. So lots of reasons why somebody couldn't go to Kansas Fest or VCF or whatever. So having these things available, I think that opens up some opportunities that wouldn't have existed. So that's one nice element. But I do think that's maybe overall completely outweighed. Like selfishly, it's good for me. I get to go to Kansas Fest this year. Downside is it's not the same thing. Like Kansas Fest is all about being there and those terrible showers and the smelly people and just being like in the, like it's, we always say like it's about the people, it's about the experience of Kansas mm-hmm. Fest. And that won't be able to be replicated. So, but at least there's going to be something. So that's cool. I think Paul touched on a really good point that there are some things, even when an event is going on regularly, that you couldn't do. Like you're not going to lug major elements of Big Iron to a VCF, for instance. And let me bring my 3 tons of computer there and set up refrigeration. So there are some things that would have to be done remotely. And maybe this is the year that that's the focus. Like focus, if you're VCF, you want to say, okay, what are the things we wouldn't have been able to do anyway? Let's do those this year and get in touch with people all around the world who have massive things or something that never could have flown them in for a VCF. Ah, we would have had to done it this way. So maybe we can get a little creative and hopefully it's just a 1 year thing. Mm-hmm. I don't know. We'll see.
I don't know to what extent people are thinking that this is turning a corner into like doing things like this in the future. You know, I still kind of think that this is the way we deal with not being able to do it. But there are things, I do think that there are ways that we can kind of do nifty new stuff. First of all, I think there's going to be a lot more kind of content available. Like if as more things are online, it's going to be more easy to go to more of them, you know? And things like Kansas Fest were difficult anyway, because you have to block out a week, you know, and travel and stuff. And so, that will be more available. I think something about what Blake said about BBS has made me think that it would be actually kind of funny to do a sort of stream where you have both ends of the BBS, you know, so you're communicating at 300 baud, you know, across the continent, but yet, you know, streaming both ends.
Yeah.
I like it.
Sort of ironic or something like that.
Yeah. But yeah, I think, I mean, like, it certainly would be fairly easy, I think, to do kind of just like talks in webinar type, you know, environments where you can just sort of like the sessions that I remember from the past Kansas Fest or whatever, you know, someone gives a talk, you ask questions, you know, that sort of thing. But there's also a little, you know, kind of sub events that I think it would be nice to still have such things. Like people, you know, Kansas Fest is the main one that I go to, so that's one that I think about, but there are like little, you know, there's a little room where people play D&D and Harrington acts completely erratically.
That's how you play D&D. That's how I role play, man.
Right.
The things like Kansas Fest and maybe to a lesser extent, a lot of other retro gatherings are in large part about the keynote speaker and the sessions. And those are things that can be replicated and streamed or whatever, like sitting in an audience, watching it, sitting in front of your computer, watching it, same kind of thing, just maybe better snacks. But the other stuff that really make an event, like hanging out in the hallway and the communal stuff, that's maybe a little different, but hopefully can be replicated through IRC, through other sorts of means. We got to bring back Second Life servers or something.
Yeah. I kept flying around and did nothing else in Second Life. I would learn how to fly and then I would quit the app.
So we all just log into like World of Warcraft or something like that. It's just, okay, gather here. We're doing it. And you can pick a thing and just do it inside another kind of
thing. What's the Commodore, you know, space? Oh, I forgot the name of that. It's, I think it was sort of related to, I'm almost there. Quantum Link. Yeah. Yeah. We could all sign into the, like the, whatever the revised Quantum Link. And
yeah, that became the Apple thing, right? Or that became AOL, right?
I think it did. Yeah. But I also think there's some sort of modern project to kind of put some new servers behind it.
Yeah. I think there is.
That'd be actually a pretty cool thing to do.
Cause a lot of those like MMORPGs and stuff, most of them have free 1 month sign up things. So easily CancerFest or VCF can say, we're hosting this in WoW. Go get a free account. You only need it for a month.
That's true.
And just roll up a character, meet us in the valley of whatever. We're doing it there.
That's true.
And if a talk starts going long, then the audience can start attacking.
Just kill them. Exactly. You talk till you die. That's the way we're going to do it.
That's right. Yeah. Another thing I was thinking about too, when you're at any kind of event where you have a presenter with a laptop trying to present something with a screen, it works 82% of the time. And
that's a very specific number.
But
also a suspiciously high number.
Oh, you think? Okay. Yeah. But I mean, there's always failures. When we're talking about now everybody on their own, possibly feeble internet connection, connecting in some way, it seems like the points of failure have increased a lot. And so there's also at least a possibility of doing things that are a little bit less synchronous, that you could pre-record your talk. You could, but I don't know what I think about that.
I am mostly pre-recorded.
Yeah.
He said that's from right. The past.
Please leave a message at the beep. Ha, fooled you. This is the beep.
Ha, fooled you again.
But I really do like the idea of being able to sort of stop someone and say, wait, did you mean, the X register this whole time or say this is a great talk or whatever.
Right. Yeah. Cause that interactive thing, if somebody's doing wrong or whatever, it makes it more present. Mm-hmm. And then as the speaker, you can say, well, first of all, how dare you speak to me? Second of all, no, I'm at the Y register. This is the hill I'm going to die right. on.
But yeah. And I mean, I guess actually too, there's just sort of a psychological difference. If you're just talking to your webcam, it's just not going to be as engaging to see the resulting video.
He said into his webcam.
Well, I can see all of you though, right? I mean,
yeah.
So I think there is some benefit to kind of knowing that there are people there judging you.
Yeah.
There are people here judging you. We have a comment in the live stream. Hi, Tobias, saying it's the first time he's listened to us live and we sound weird at one time speed.
We all sound slightly drunk.
I can speak faster. I'm trying desperately to speak slower.
Yeah. No, I think I've mentioned that before, that this happens to me. I used to listen to Car Talk all the time. I sort of have stopped, but and even though they're still things on the feed, I guess they must be mining, sort of old recordings or whatever. But but it was really weird to like then go on a car trip and listen to them in the car live on the radio, and they really did sound very slow.
But, huh. I actually do you typically listen at higher speed? I actually don't.
I don't either. I listen at one time. Yeah. Being immortal, I've got lots of time.
I guess that's true. Okay. I don't think I had anything myself further that I wanted to kind of talk about. It's, I think I'll be interested to see what other people, what people do with their various events. I know that pretty much everything through the end of summer is going to be either canceling or doing some alternative thing.
Hmm. It will be very interesting. Yep. And because of this, I mean, again, that's the only upside. I do intend to attend way more than I normally would. So I'm going to try to take advantage of all of these because why not?
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. I'm with you.
I'm crashing every party. You're on notice, retro computing people. I'm coming for y'all. Yeah.
Zoom bomber, right?
Yeah. I am the Zoom bomber. What bombs at midnight?
Okay, so maybe we can move along to notes of listener feedback here. On Facebook, Yakov posted some images of a compact Contura 430 CX notebook with Win95 and Word 6 and said, use it also for writing novels. And do you use old computers for something more or less practical? And I thought, that's kind of cool. That's kind of a cool thing to put on the Facebook as kind of like conversation starter and have people kind of talk through these things. And in the sort of comments to that, John replied saying that he used an IBM portable to test an old LaserJet. I think it was just recently to that comment. But I think Steve won by replying that he's using a Commodore 64 to learn guitar, using it to write tablatures and robotically control a guitar to hear the music and show where to put my fingers on the fretboard. And I don't.
That's pretty cool. That is pretty amazing.
So I don't know if you guys actually looked at this, but this thing is amazing. This thing is ridiculous. It is.
It sounds like something Jerry Ellsworth would do. Didn't she have she's got a bass that's a.
It's a guitar playing machine.
Oh, goodness. I'm
controlled
looking at it right
by
now.
A Commodore 64.
This is.
Got to get a band together.
Quite something.
That is, yeah.
That is tremendous and amazing.
Yeah. And there's audio, of course, and stuff. But
it's almost frightening that someone has done this.
Yeah. I'm not sure that it's actually, you know, sort of useful in real life. I do like it.
That's incredible.
So I'm not sure that this robot playing guitar for him is going to help him learn to play guitar.
No, I think that might be a bit of a stretch.
I was just pondering that. I thought, wait, I don't really, I'm not sure that's going to, yeah. But still, it, in its own right, it's quite
it's amazing.
Yeah. Anyway, okay.
The best part will be he can now basically build a band, like, you know, make one on bass, make one on keyboards, make one on drums, and then eventually all the robots get together and vote him out of the band, and it's like, what? And they go on tour without him. It's a sad story. I've seen it a thousand times.
Well, there is some guy who's made, like, a robot metal band. Have you guys seen this?
I don't think I have.
It pops up for me on YouTube through something now and then. It's like he's got, like, you know, roughly human-sized robots that are built much more than this because they have heads and
that bang.
They're the heads that can bang.
They have bodies they don't need just so they look like a band so they can do this. And there's a drummer and there's a drummer with many, many arms hitting all the drums and stuff.
Sort of octopus type drummer.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I will have to look for that. Perhaps we can find a link to put in the show notes if it is family friendly enough. At least.
No, it's totally. Yeah. It's very good. Friendly for all.
Awesome. So on Facebook, Anthony pointed out something which I thought was kind of interesting as well. So this is kind of cheating, I suppose, in a way. But it's an eBay auction here. I'll increase the size a bit. It is Computer Sport Athlete Interactive Fitness. So I'm sort of jumping ahead to eBay picks early, but this was not my pick. but it's a thing that what does it say here? Being physically fit is no longer a fad, but as a way of life. Unfortunately, the problem with exercising is the boring and monotonous workouts. So what this is, it's basically just a little device that you can, okay. So it doesn't actually provide you with the exercise equipment. It just provides you with the thing to occupy your brain.
You'd connect it to like a bicycle or like a home biking machine. And then you can do work. Basically Nintendo said, hey, this is a great idea. Let's build our infrastructure around it.
But I thought that was kind of cool.
This is amazing. I did not know that this existed back then.
So, I mean, I guess if you're missing bike riding, I kind of thought that there was actually some sort of like pedal device included in this, but I see that that's not what this is. What a terrible place for your computer to be, though, actually. Like, yeah, okay, I'm going to put it in front of the bike.
Dresser that it's
my
sitting
desktop.
On. File cabinet.
It'd be even better if it was just a regular game, but the computer is powered by the fact that you're bicycling.
Yeah.
Gotta go until I save. Yeah. Bike, haven't saved, must pedal.
Imagine you could do that, though, with like a Raspberry Pi or something, right? I mean, like something that doesn't actually require significant power.
It's right out of Gilligan's Island.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, so that was interesting, and I thought, you know, an excuse to sneak an extra eBay auction in.
Because you didn't have enough of those.
Right. Mark wrote on Twitter, I'll say this, although I think it's probably Earl that is most interested in this, because we were talking about this NMyGen thing, which is basically, it's kind of a helper for creating like FPGA type stuff. And it's I think it's written in Python or something, as I recall. It helps you create more easily than Verilog and so forth. And so Mark wrote on Twitter, he wanted to look at NMyGen, thought it was maybe a little bit light on documentation, but pointed out a tutorial that he thought was pretty good in terms of like trying to learn how it works. So if you are intrigued by our previous discussion of NMyGen, I think at the end of one of the previous episodes, whenever Earl was on last, then this might be a way to learn more about it. Credit to the people on the IRC, apparently, the NMyGen IRC, who told it to Mark, who told it to us.
Cool.
Anthony wrote on Twitter, he spoke of being in high school with a Novell Netware 211 XT network and a 286 file server, and sort of talked about his exploits. They seem pretty exploity, I have to say. But basically wrote a keylogger in Turbo Pascal to get the admin passwords, and then replaced all the things like multiplan with games like Alley Cat and Sopwith and Network Snipes. And then later tweeted some photos of him in those places, because he said he was a nerd enough to actually like take photos of his old IT hangouts.
I can respect that.
Yeah, so that's pretty cool. Yeah, we were talking, I think, a couple times ago about how we wished we had more photos of such things.
Definitely.
And let's see. Oh, yeah. And I guess the last thing that I will mention is, yeah, just before we recorded, we got an email from Alain. And So he was talking, basically, last time we had this auction for it was like an Apple II connected chessboard, right? And Alan wrote, he basically wanted to share some of the information about, you know, the company that makes this. So first of all, he said he'd never come across this before, although Applied Concepts is a well-known manufacturer. So that's interesting in itself. I mean, somebody who is a collector in this space that had not come across that thing. But he sent some pictures of one of the more famous of that company's products, which is the Sargon 2.5 chess set, and you can see, so I've got that on the screen here. You can see that it is basically the same company, right? I mean, like it's kind of made the same way. So except this is a standalone thing, so it doesn't, you don't plug it into a computer, it just does it itself. And it's based on Sargon, the Spracklin chess game. And then also send a picture of a nice wooden auto response board, same sort of thing.
And again, auto response isn't necessarily moving the players automatically. It just lights up to say you move, and then it knows where you moved, and then it lights up accordingly. I think there was some discussion on Twitter about whether or not these things are magnetic or not.
Yeah. So what Alan says in the email is that with this kind of board, moves by the player are usually entered by pressing the departure square and then the arrival square of the moving piece. The wooden board had reed switches activated by magnets in the pieces themselves, which could detect a piece being on the corresponding square. So it is as the Twitter conversation suggested, that there are little reed switches inside the board. So the board itself isn't magnetic, but it's responsive to magnets.
So you still use all the pieces to demagnetize the floppy disk. So at least there is something in that box that can kill the floppy disk. That's the most important thing.
Thank goodness.
And then he sent a picture of the Prodigy standalone chess computer, which is basically, it seems like this is the same thing as what that auction was, except that without the Apple II part. So it's just kind of, it's got its own brain. Okay, so from a strength level, Prodigy is rated higher than Sargon 2.5, but nothing extraordinary. But anyway, so that was interesting. It's interesting to see, you know, the other things in this space. And Alan also, he had a Kansas Fest 2017 Hackfest entry, which I think made Sargon 2 play itself. So he sort of hacked the Sargon 2 program to submit moves to another instance of the Sargon 2 program, if I remember correctly. So now I guess post-feedback, we can go into the items of interest in news. And Carrington has the first of these.
I got T-shirts. So we were talking about different events going online and becoming virtual or whatever. And VCF is offering T-shirts. So the VCF events, as they say, might be canceled or postponed or whatever. But they say, don't be socially distant from this T-shirt. So it's $20 and it's a VCF, like a VCF Ed, VC Fed, I guess we pronounce it.
That's VCFed. What I've been saying.
yeah, VCFed.org. So it's a neat T-shirt. It's the green CRT, or you can get it in an amber version as well. It's $20. And buying the shirt helps support the VCF world.
It's a nice looking shirt.
It's kind of neat. So sucks that things are postponed, but the shirt would be cool to wear.
Yeah, it's a good design, I think. Quite nice.
Yep. I really, really like the idea that it's available in amber too. That is hilarious and wonderful.
Yep.
You say it's green. The shirt is black, I guess, and the art is the artwork, the line art is green. Is that right?
Yeah.
That's how I see it as, okay. Yes. Yeah. Black shirt with either green or amber. Very glowy sort of designs on them. Mm-hmm. And I dig it. I dig the design, dig everything about it. I like the shirts. This easily could have been a host gift idea, but is instead an item of interest.
Okay. Yes, but feel free to consider it a host gift idea.
Because it's a slow news time. Slow news.
Excellent.
And only $20, so that's pretty good.
And Jack, you have FujiNet reports.
Yes. So we've talked a few times about FujiNet, which is a device that's being built for Atari 8-bit computers to do a variety of networking things. And the latest sort of fun trick they've done is find a way to do HTTPS, which is tricky because you can't really do that on 6502 in a reasonable way. So the device that's in the FujiNet hardware itself, it's some kind – I forget what the name of the CPU is. It's some sequence of numbers and letters. Mm-hmm. And this device is powerful enough to do HTTPS. So what they've done, I'm showing in the video here is sort of a DOS prompt where they're opening kind of a port to Twitter.com over HTTPS. And then there's a special set of things they have to do. This is very much a work in progress kind of thing. What they're going to do is have a certificate store on the device. So this device will, just like a web browser, it will be able to say, okay, I have this root certificates that I know about, and therefore I can authenticate that this server is doing the right kind of thing, just like your web browser is doing all the time.
Mm.
So in this case, that's not really in place yet. So what he's doing here is he is setting up a special sort of command sequence to tell the device, okay, I'm going to load you up with a certificate right now. And so he has the certificate stored on a floppy or on an image of a floppy, sends it over to the device, which is just connected to the SAO port. And that is enough for it to be able to then talk to Twitter and say, okay, I've got this certificate that seems to work for HTTPS to this website or to this URL. And then he can do a fetching bytes for that. And so you get unencrypted serial stream of bytes that comes through to the Atari. It's pretty cool. So here he's doing it. There's a sequence where he's got to sort of first tell it. He's got to put it in cert mode to say, I'm sending you a cert. And he's got to take it out of cert mode to say, I'm not sending you a cert. Now I want you to actually fetch the data for me. And then he reads chunks of bytes at a time. It's a pretty cool demo. The demo is only about 3 or 4 minutes long.
But still, that's a pretty good proof of concept, because one of the downsides to the most retro computers' way of getting on the net anymore is you can't go into anything with secure sockets.
Right.
In fact, we've recently talked about that website that exists to just say, here's a list of stuff on the net that's not secure, the dwindling number of places you can go to.
Yep.
So this is cool.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, I think this is really, really promising. I mean, it works. And again, obviously, this is not going to be that useful for what he's doing now, grabbing an HTML page full of JSON and stuff like that and JavaScript and things. But, you know, that's okay. The point is to be able to fetch data off of servers that are HTTPS secured.
Mm-hmm. Well,
so
cool.
So what I lose track sometimes of what the plan is, but I thought this was essentially a way to make it like a network drive, right? Like, so eventually it's an addressable AIM drive.
Right. And that is already working through a different protocol.
I see.
That is, I forget what it's called. It's some protocol I think already existed for the Spectrum to do a similar kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And they took that and used the same protocol, maybe made some kind of adaptations. So right now already you can, with this device, you can apparently boot it up and tell it to connect to a server on your LAN or on the internet to fetch a disk to boot from. So that much is already working. This is more about being able to do more things that involve talking to a standard HTTPS server.
Right. Very cool.
So, yep, it's pretty interesting.
Yeah, and I should say, I mean, like, Tom Cherryarn does post regularly on our Facebook group. And I haven't – it's kind of counterintuitive, but because there are so many updates, I don't mention any of them. but I do appreciate them, and we should mention them from time to time. But if you you know, so if you haven't gone to the Facebook because you were afraid there weren't enough Fujinet updates, never fear.
And it's really fun to see the progress and to see what's going on. And it's also all open source, so you can sort of download it and check it out and contribute if you want. They want help with people working on software that's running on this microcontroller. Specifically, which is all just done in C, so it's not really a retro task. It's more networking and protocols and that kind of stuff. So,
excellent.
Seems pretty fun.
Yeah. I'm nodding, and then I'm realizing that's not a very useful thing to do in audio.
And I guess that ultimately one thing would be, so right now they have this special protocol they're using to be able to fetch stuff from another server, but that requires that server to be running, you know, something that does that protocol. Whereas if you could just have an Atari disk image on a plain Jane web server and have this thing just fetch it and boot off of it, that would make it so much easier to deal with. And I guess that's a future step.
Excellent.
I presume.
Okay, let's see. Blake, you have a more rogue news.
I've got a tiny, it's just a little item here, but it's something, it occurred to me, I've been having a little bit of fun with this since I was last here. We talked about roguelikes, I guess, a couple of shows ago, I think. But anyway, there's a online game, it's kind of like Steam, it's a little network called itch.io, and indie developers, you know, kind of push their stuff through there. I don't think they have... It doesn't have to be exclusive, but anyway, I keep an eye on it. they have really inexpensive indie stuff, and often they can be name your own price, which can be free, which is the case with this game. It's a roguelike called I really don't know how you pronounce it. It's called Atgtha in Absurdia. Does anyone have a better take on that? Atgtha. Anyway, it's the original Rogue game, and the clones that came shortly after were all text-based. This is a graphical game, but it renders renders text characters. It's like a fancy font type text-based game, but the little characters are animated. There's bouncing, and there's a little bit of graphics added in, and the whole screen tilts and wobble. It's very visually fun, I think, but while keeping the kind of the old aesthetic. It's pretty straightforward as far as, roguelike gameplay, but I think, I paid like $2 for it, but you can download it for free. There's lots of roguelikes out there, and they're coming out frequently, but this one I happened to come across, and I've had fun with it, and I recommend it. I think it's for, it's definitely for Windows and Mac, and it might also be for Linux, but it's worth checking out. It's fun, and it feels, old school, so. But that's my little bullet for this episode.
Neat.
Cool.
Okay, let's see. My thing is, this is very interesting and weird. So this is Project Sphinx. This was written up on inexhibit.com by Riccardo Bianchini. Not super recently, but I only came across it recently. This is basically a computer that was developed in the Soviet Union. Technical Aesthetics magazine published these photos of the Sphinx, but it's basically this 1987 idea of a computer that's sort of like a kind of a full home integrated thing. There's some kind of a nice pictures of it, and some discussion of the actual designer who I think currently is in Canada, but was born in Russia and
Woo-hoo.
Set that up. And it's, so first of all, it's very visually appealing. It's all made out of these little triangles, and there's little three modular sort of cartridge things that you put in that I think have sort of memory in them.
It is 80s, and it is not ashamed of it.
Yeah, it actually seems like something you'd see on a set in 2001, a Space Odyssey.
Yeah, or late right. 70s even.
Yeah, yeah, like, I think even more 70s. Yeah.
Yeah, it is pretty beautiful. But so it includes with the main sort of desktop part, it includes a keyboard that has an optional phone. And there's a TV that you put elsewhere in your house, but it's all sort of controlled by this one device. There are sort of detachable speakers, and there's a little headset. There's a little ball speakers that hang near the TV. I think there was somewhere in one of these. There's a sort of a image of this thing set up in a house. Here, maybe it's in the Medium article,
or maybe set up on the set of the Buck Rogers TV show, because it would fit in perfectly. Yeah.
It is really cool, though. And I mean, I think that part of the thing that's neat about it is just that this is all stuff that we kind of do now, right? I mean, but this was 1987, and it was kind of clear already then how you would do this. But it's all done in this really elegant way. I mean, like, it's all these like geometric, it's all kind of based on triangles. Yeah, I guess here is a picture of sort of a home layout with the TV in one room with a little ball speakers and, the main terminal elsewhere.
An orthogonally rendered home representation. Yeah. Yeah.
So anyway,
it looks really, really cool.
Didn't know a thing about this before.
Nope. So this was a Soviet thing, you're saying? Or the site saying? Is that,
yeah.
So is that why I never heard of this?
Yeah, I think so. So that's part of the thing, is that it's sort of like on behind the Iron Curtain. But this is Dmitry Azarkan, is the one who basically designed this whole thing. And they keep a couple of different articles refer to it as a home ecosystem, a smart home ecosystem. But it seems somehow smart home doesn't really conjure the image of what this is. It's really kind
of fascinating.
Integrated computers.
One of my favorite things is if you look really closely at the photo of the there are those two ball speakers you're saying that hang. They look like massive Christmas ornaments, holes drilled in them. Those are the speakers. They hang from the ceiling, presumably, with these cables. But if you look closely, they're not regular cables. They're spiral telephone cords. Oh, so the kind that would be spongy. Oh, so I can imagine you could reach up and grab these things and pull them down and have them be bouncing around.
Oh, yeah.
I want to play with these.
That would be pretty fun.
Yep. I've never heard of this thing before. No. This is absolutely new to me.
I've never seen anything like this.
Yep. This is cool. People who are just listening, as most of you would be, I would strongly urge you go and check out the show notes and look at this link, because this stuff is very cool.
Yeah.
It's very different than I've seen before. Neat. So, Blake, how many of these do you have in your collection?
I've got three. I'm sure Paul,
it fits
I'm
with
sure
the triangle.
Paul has one on his shelf. Paul may not know that he has one, but it's
Paul has a couple each. Well,
that's what that is.
Like, I saw this triangular thing laying on the floor, but... No,
awesome.
I'd never heard of this.
All right. Harrington, you have something about Atari?
Yes, I do. So Blake, a couple minutes ago, was talking about itch.io, which is a great place to find indie games and stuff. It's also a great place to find online stuff if you're looking for just like free games to play online.
Yeah.
Lots of HTML5 things there that are available for free. It's one of my go-to places if I'm bored and I've got an hour to kill and I just want to play a game online or something and check out something different. It's a good site to go to. But a thing that you can do now is you could go to itch.io/jam/links2020 and enter the Atari Lynx 2020 programming contest, which is on now. So if you have an idea for a Lynx game and can implement it either singly or as a team, then you can enter this contest, which is open now. You submit through April 15th. Opens as of April 15th. Submission deadline is August 15th, and then they'll do votes. Top three places in the competition will all receive a Lynx Go cartridge, which is like one of those little cartridges you can load up with a bunch of SD ROMs, so you can have like all your Lynx games in one place. And then first prize also gets $150 US, second prize gets $100, and third prize gets nothing but the Go cartridge. But you also might get your game published by Atari Age, and so you'd get multiple copies of your own game as well given back to you as a published version if you are selected as one of the top three winners. So pretty cool. I like the Lynx. I had one back in the day. I really only played like three or four games on it. I played a lot of Klax. To me, the Lynx was the Klax machine. And then I had maybe four or five other cartridges, but it was all about Klax for me. So you can write the new Klax. You can write Klax 2020. Get yourself published.
That's great. That's fascinating. I know there are emulators for the Lynx. So I imagine whether or not you have a Lynx, you can probably end up benefiting from what is generated. I actually went and pulled out my Lynx for those that are only on the podcast and not the stream. I've got the Lynx, which I actually found in my wife's childhood bedroom closet when I went over to visit her, to meet her mother for the first time. She showed me the room that she'd grown up in, and in the closet was a Lynx. She's like, oh yeah, someone gave me this, but I never opened it, and she had no interest in computer things, so I got her Lynx.
You said yoink.
Yeah, it's new in box Lynx, but that's nice. Great. I hadn't heard about that competition, Carrington.
Yeah, it just opened up, so it's pretty cool. And so there's some rules involved, one of which is it has to, unlike a lot of competitions where you can submit just like you're working on a thing, whatever, this is for completed things. It has to be a complete game, totally runnable.
Okay.
Because I guess the idea is it's something that maybe could get published.
Right.
Doesn't have to necessarily be an enormous thing or whatever, but it can't be just an idea or whatever. You've got to be able to actually launch it, run it, play an actual game, and then it's a neat competition. No limit to the number of people in teams or whatever if you want to enter with multiple people. You can also enter more than once if you want to do multiple entries. Prizes are all just one per item, though, so you'd have to pick among your team how you're going to divide things up if you wanted to. But it's pretty cool. Yeah, so it's a competition open now.
Very cool.
Hooray for new games for old machines.
Yep, that's awesome.
Very cool.
Excellent. Okay, I think I have the last of the news items, which is not a nice one, but nevertheless, it seems like we should mention this at least. So John Conway, who everybody's going to know as the author of The Game of Life, has passed away.
Yes.
And ultimately, I think, you know, occasionally when you would have asked him, he would have kind of hated the fact that this was the thing, this little dumb thing, you know, was the thing that basically defined his work. I mean, like he...
Yeah, because he was the guy all about knot theory and stuff. He like did all this great math, but everyone's like, oh, you made that little game. He's like, kill him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But so there's at Princeton University, there's a pretty long kind of obituary article about the stuff he's accomplished and so forth. He's also, New York Times has another one that's, both of them are quite long, I mean, and detailed and interesting to kind of read through. XKCD made a nice sort of memorial as well. Also, people should read XKCD if they don't.
Yeah, they should.
He's So there are a number of episodes on Numberphile, the Numberphile videos. This one that is on the screen is the one that, you know, it's entitled "Does John Conway Hate the Game of Life?" You know, which is part of what I was saying, but it actually shows him kind of like describing how it's supposed to work and, you know, like the kind of loose connection with biology that makes it go. I'm sure because it's such a simple thing, I'm sure most people have some experience with it and also possibly even some experience with like writing it on an 8-bit machine or something.
Yeah.
It's something you can do. But it also has these really sort of interesting predictable properties so that you can make sort of like quite large computers with them.
I tried to research a bit about him, but the problem is if you have like any 3 tabs open about him, then one dies and you need at least 2 tabs.
That's right. You have to have like a CNN one in between or something.
Right. To keep it going. It's the it's very difficult to research.
That's right.
All those weird tab rules. And then my computer just going across the screen.
Yeah.
As a result of his passing, I saw someone post a link to a description. I don't know if it's his description, but it's someone walking through a description of how to implement the game of life using the APL programming language.
Oh, nice.
Which was really fascinating because basically they built it up piece by piece. And at the end, the entire sort of algorithm for calculating the state, the next state of the grid from the previous state is one line of code.
Yeah.
It's a fairly dense line of code, but it's one line. It's just a function that takes as its input the previous state kind of and produces the new state in one line. It's pretty wild.
And it's completely untypable on a normal human keyboard.
Yes.
Exactly with CPL.
One of the other things he's known for is the Doomsday Rule, which I didn't know about before today, but it's basically just an algorithm that allows you to calculate the day of the week of a given date. Is this familiar to everybody?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Well, I might not to me.
Okay. So I didn't know this, but it turns out that it is actually true that April 4th, June 6th, August 8th, October 10th, December 12th, and the last day of February are always the same day every year. So sort of using this and a little algorithm, he sort of basically figures out a way to compute like the century anchor date. And then there's a little thing, you know, that you do with dividing by 12 and using the remainder and then dividing by 4 and doing, you know, some other stuff that can help you figure out basically what day of the week it is. And apparently he was able to do this in something like 2 seconds usually. You just tell him a date and he would be able to tell you it was a Tuesday. Never did get the hang of Tuesdays.
Nice.
But anyway, I thought that was sort of interesting. And actually, Lewis Carroll had a similar one. It was sort of more poetic.
Except it involved a lion and some really shallow.
Yeah. So Lewis Carroll's. Okay. So you take the date given in 4 portions and you know, summing them together. If it exceeds 7, divide by 7. Do some division. Take the remainder. Multiply the remainder. But
feed it to a flamingo.
The thing that I think was actually kind of interesting is that when you get to the month level, it says if the month begins or ends with a vowel, subtract the number. And I mean, you know, I guess it works or whatever, but I think that is
okay.
Fantastic.
That is fantastic.
Wow.
So anyway, so I learned about various algorithms for computing the day of a date based on this. Sad
I think news. A lot of people forget that Carroll did a lot of math stuff. He wasn't just writing weird books.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, I think that he was largely a mathematician in his own mind.
Yeah.
So okay, and I think if we made it through everybody's items of interest, is there nothing interesting left?
The upcoming shows, what's still going ahead?
Nothing. Yeah, I think we need not. Oh, and in fact, I don't even see that section in my, oh, here it is. I thought I just removed it altogether. But
basically things are online and well, Paul, I forgot you're on the Cancer Fest committee.
Yes.
So has there been a decision made about the kind of tech that will be involved? Are you allowed to talk about it? Like, is it a Zoom thing? Is it just presentations?
Oh yeah. Well,
is it too early to discuss things, which is also fun?
Yeah. I mean, well, we've been talking a little bit about what to use. I mean, I think, something Zoom like is almost certainly going to be involved, you know, something that can do a kind of multi-person live conference with responses and that kind of thing, you know, so it's possible to ask a voice question and that kind of thing. So we want there to be some kind of interactivity. There are a few different Zoom-like platforms. It doesn't have to be Zoom. And there are pros and cons, you know, with any of these platforms in terms of like corporate behavior. Right. But yeah, I mean, so I think the last thing that we have been saying, I think, is essentially that we're basically going to keep an eye on everything because it's not very close to July yet. I mean, like, we had to make the decision about like whether people had to buy tickets and that kind of stuff. And I mean, like, ultimately, I don't think we could have made a different decision about going ahead because pretty soon the venue would have said you can't do it. But they hadn't said that yet, actually, oddly. But anyway, yeah. So even though we had to make that decision soon, we can still get pretty close to the end point before we make the call on what is the video conferencing software.
That's one advantage over, I mean, not a lot of advantages to any of this, but one advantage of this sort of thing happening now versus, say, 10 years ago is conferencing stuff is fairly robust, even if it's just things like GoToMeeting. Like, I've been in GoToMeetings that have 700, 800 participants because there's only the one person sending out the video and everybody else is just in chat mode. Mm-hmm. So at least there's a lot of solutions available that can like stand up to a bunch of people being involved in it. Right. So I guess there's that.
Indeed. Okay, so, right, I guess it is now time for a word from our sponsor.
You owe me $95,000, and I want it now.
But what about me and my four children?
I'm going to have to sell the cattle ranch.
How much?
$200,000.
Oh, I've got to pay my father-in-law $10,000.
Oh, why not buy insurance?
Decisions. Oh, pay me. Lawyer's salary, please.
There's a game called Life that's really worth living. You and your family have got to play it. The Game of Life from Milton Bradley.
I spend my life in pursuit of cool, which, like energy, can neither be created nor destroyed, only enjoyed. Sometimes I cannot be as one with cool, too busy with the grind. But when I shake loose, I home in on cool like a bird dog, with my Motorola pager. It's how I stay connected with my very cool friends. So when my Motorola pager beeps or vibrates, I know that somewhere coolness is calling. Get a Motorola pager and know, now, not knowing is not cool.
Motorola, what you never thought possible.
You gonna buy the same old game, boy?
Atari Lynx, the portable video arcade. With the biggest screen for full-color attraction. Stereo sound and 16-bit action. And more games for total satisfaction. Lynx will blow you away. Lynx, more fun and games from Atari.
Fidelity Electronics introduces the first chess game that not only thinks, but also speaks to you.
I am Fidelity Chess Challenger, your computer opponent. Enter your move B1, C3, enter. From H4 to F2, queen takes on check and mate.
Fidelity's Challenger Series games define stores everywhere.
And we're back. So the host retro computing gift idea for this time is a book. It is called Home Computers, 100 Icons That Defined a Digital Generation. And it is by Alex Wiltshire. And I think, where is the photographer's name? I will tell you the photographer's name soon. But it basically has both text and just great photos of a lot of sort of historical computers. So at least in the U.S., it is published and distributed by MIT Press. It seems to be in the U.K., it is published and distributed by Thames and Hudson. I don't actually know exactly how the publication works. But in The Guardian, there was actually a pretty nice write-up about this. So this is the real thing that tells you something about it. So it's got some of the images from the book. And we've got a picture of a PET 2001, and I don't even know what that is in the middle, but, you know, like a terminal of some sort. And the Alice, the red weird angled Alice.
Yes.
I think that's a ZX Spectrum clone.
Yeah. I believe it's, Australian.
Yes.
But, so there's the write up in The Guardian, actually, you know, it's sort of spoilers for the book, you know, so it's got a bunch of the photos and they're really nice. The photos are really nice. But I think the book itself, you know, also has text about all these computers. And it's going to be released May 19th, 2020. So it's not quite out yet, but you can pre-order it. And it is 256 pages.
I want that book.
Cool. Yeah, I think I do too.
The funny thing is, I'll find it, the Publishers Weekly did a write-up on it, and that's what I was looking at. And they basically panned it, and I disagreed with them. Here it is. Okay, I'll throw a link in the show notes as well. They say, after saying, like, here's what it is, and it does this, and it weighs 24 they says it covers all the winners and losers, but their conclusion is the photography, meanwhile, doesn't do the book any favors and has the sterility of an early 80s computer catalog. The result will appeal to the most avid computer aficionados, but leave the average user cold. Really disagree.
Does this not look,
but yeah. I can see maybe it wouldn't appeal to my mom or something, but I think I think they're misunderstanding who the target for this book is. And I think the photography is delightful and wonderful. I don't understand the Publisher Weekly write-up on this. So
yeah,
I'll put a link to the show notes.
From the examples I see, I mean, there's a certain sterile vibe to them that fits, you know, what it is that they're showing. These machines from the past, maybe it's stark under someone, you know, under a non-retro observer. I don't know. They seem very nice to me.
Yeah.
Yep.
Right. Exactly. It looks like a museum write-up, largely. So if you on the Thames and Hudson site, actually, they have quite a lot of sort of sample pages that you can look at. And I mean, it makes it look actually even more interesting than the Guardian write-up made it look. You know, so there is a significant text, and it is, you know, nicely laid out and some definitely artistic shots and stuff.
Yeah.
Like the Minivac 601. And
yeah, I'm not going to have an option. I have to get this book.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know how much it is. Let's see. How much is it?
Yeah, I was kind of afraid when you said... You said 200. You were talking about the page number. You said it's 290. And I was feeling...
Oh, it's $256. A very, very sensible number.
What was that?
256 pages.
Ah, that is a good number. Oh, it's only...
$30, £25.
Yeah. Well, that's less than I thought it would be.
Yeah. So I think this is a very good retro computing gift idea for all of us to get ourselves.
Yes.
I agree.
Absolutely.
So,
probably won't be for sale forever.
Yeah. It might go out of print because it might be a small audience, because maybe everybody believes the Publishers Weekly or whatever.
It seems like books opinions. Like this... I have a number of books not unlike this on the shelf. Some are, you know, rather smaller productions. Some are bigger, but I found that typically they, you know, after a few years, they're gone.
Yeah.
Get it while you can.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see. So now, I guess maybe once you're done pre-ordering that, we can turn to eBay auctions. And I guess, Blake, you have the first few.
I have a few. The first one, and I dug a little bit and found out more than I initially had on this one. This is a humorous listing. It's the Darth Nexter, as in Next Computer Mask, 4000A monitor to help you create social distancing and smiles. So there's a picture of an individual who is taking a selfie with his phone, and he is wearing on his head, concealing his face, is the back end of a Next 17-inch megapixel monochrome monitor, which looks it looks like it might have been something from Spaceballs, the movie, possibly. But it's funny. He describes taking social distancing to the next level. He says when people see him wearing the mask, they run. So people have hissed, laughed. They get the heck out of the way when they see it. So it appears this is actually a sale for the back shell of a 4000A Next monitor, and he's selling it. It looks like apparently the seller was afflicted with the pandemic that we're seeing here, and he's funding things back with some sales. And when I did a little bit of digging, it turns out this is the man or one of the people behind Black Hole Inc., the Next computer. They sold Next hardware on, it was an early online store that opened in 93. And they were, you know, Next peripherals, accelerators, and I've ordered things from them just almost basically 1993, different items, books, things like that. So this is the guy behind that store. I'm actually not sure. I didn't have a chance to see if the Black Hole Inc. store is still online, but apparently, at least on eBay, this individual, and he has, as Paul is showing on the YouTube stream, sharing, yeah, he's got a lot of Next hardware that he's selling, which I imagine he's continued to sell over the years. So yeah, I'm glad to hear. It seems that a bit of a rough patch, but it sounds like he's doing better after what he's gone through. But anyway, it looks to be an actual auction for the back shell, but for $75. So if you have a Next megapixel screen that has a naked back, then you might want to grab this. And,
yeah, or you know, good Halloween costume.
Yes, I'm sure. Think of how many Next fans would stop and say, "Oh, I see what you've done there. I see what you've done there. Well done."
Choose of Next fans.
Indeed. So
you can go with your friend who's going as Peter Norton or whatever, right?
That's right. Okay, so on from there, found this. It's called a 3D Connection Spaceball 5000. Used, very very good condition, USB. It in of itself is not highly retro, but it's, I remember back in the early 90s, it's basically, it looks like a trackball to those that aren't looking at the stream, and it's a 3D controller. Basically, it's a ball that sits on a little pedestal. It's not like a trackball where the ball is half embedded in the body. It's sitting almost fully above. There's buttons to the left and the right, and it's one of these 3D controllers where you can do yaw, pitch type 3D movements. It was used for CAD and certain games, and I think you could also use it as a typical mouse ball. But this takes me back to like maybe in the late 80s, early 90s, where I encountered a number of these. I think some place I was working in the summer had one for CAD stuff, and I remember the ads, and some of the game magazines would talk about control. Descent, the game 3D Descent with this 3D ball. So it's not extremely retro, but it just took me back to some of these some of those things. Do you guys remember this type of thing at all?
No. I don't remember that particular one, but I've seen that sort of thing quite a bit, especially people would have them attached to like SGIs and stuff, all 3D things.
Yeah, this is USB.
But I have fond memories of Descent.
Yeah. And not being able to control it, so I wish I had a bit of hardware.
Yeah, you could. This would certainly make it better. Yeah, Descent was one of those joystick and the keyboard simultaneously. It was not an easy thing to control. But this one has USB, so this unit itself is not as old as some of the other ones that we... that might have used this PC or Apple analog input. But anyway, it took me back, and it's, I think, $22, if I'm not mistaken, in good condition from Connection. But
cool.
So moving on to my last item, this one is another kind of a mystery. I offer it here as a curiosity. It's $239 for a Cantel, I think it's pronounced Quantel, model 4150, the item lists a serial number, and it says vintage computing, and not much else is stated. It's basically, it's a little, very boxy, just a metal box. It looks almost like a project kit computer, but on the back, there's a video connector, there's serial ports, parallel ports, keyboard, looks like a PC-style pre-PS2 keyboard port. And I noticed on the motherboard, it has, I did a good bit of searching for Cantel, and I couldn't find any information. It has a 68,000 processor, which is interesting. And it's a single board system. Not to be confused, I was led astray. There's a Quantel made a series of early graphics computers, but I don't believe there's any connection. There's no U in Cantel, and I can't tell what this is. I wondered if anyone, maybe somebody listening out there, would have some idea, or maybe one of the other roundtable folks would have a clue. But I find things like this that seem completely out of nowhere interesting. So
I have no idea.
No idea. And the price was, I think, $239. And there's precious little, there's a one line bit of information from clean environment, but untested. I don't think the seller has any idea what it is either. So, $26 delivery. to me in the DC area. But I'd be curious to hear more if any listeners might know what it is. There are some motherboard pictures, so that could maybe clue some people in, but I couldn't get anywhere with it.
Yeah. It doesn't look that complicated.
Mm-mm.
So like it not feels like it can't do that much. I mean,
yeah. Yeah, the 68,000 is interesting because, you know, there were relatively less, I think, 68,000 systems. I feel like I know most of everything that used a 68,000, but never encountered this. And the starkness, no, just the fact that it's a metal box, you know, it doesn't look like it had, there's no, you know, design element to it at all.
It's supposed to be in your server closet or whatever.
Curiosity, yeah. It has video keyboard ports, so it seems to be a computer, you know, like a general purpose sort of thing. Yeah, I don't know. Hopefully somebody out there might have some idea.
No, the only thing I've been able to find at all on a site called verycomputer.com, back in 2002, somebody was cleaning out their closet and wondering what this thing was they found that was a little larger than an external modem, which was a Contel. But that's it. Mm-hmm. Like, and there's a small mention of the company, mm-hmm. one thing in Computer World.
Yeah, I saw that.
But I mean, nothing. I've never heard of this company before.
I spent about 30 minutes as I was eating lunch today, you know, digging. And yeah, I didn't come up with anything.
I can't even really tell what it is from looking at it.
Yeah. You see the 68,000, but the other chips, there's nothing that's clearly a graphics chip. I mean, it seems like. Looks like a number of I/O chips. There's some
ROM.
But
looking at its ports, it's got a port for video, a port for keyboard, a port for pointer, which would be like presumably a mouse type thing. Mm-hmm. I don't know. How weird.
Yeah, it's very curious. And again, for whatever reason, with the systems that I know, the fact that it has a 68,000 and we haven't heard of it makes it more bizarre to me. I mean, there's a lot of Z80 machines that I haven't heard of, you know, for instance. But,
right.
But
I'm sure. Well, Paul will buy it. He'll tell us what it is.
I was hoping Paul had one on his shelf, and he's going to pull it out.
I've not heard of this.
You can't say that definitively, Paul. You don't know.
That's right. Okay.
Yeah. Is there the Dallas clock chip? There's like a EPROM in there, but it's basic. Anyway.
Yep.
Onward. That's it for me.
Excellent. Okay, let's see. Carrington, are you going to share your screen or am I going to share your screen?
Sure, I'll share some screens. Let me share it. The first one I've got is a Mac SE30, new in original box. And then the person opens the box to tell you, show you all the stuff that's in it. Oh, so it's newish, kind of. It was already in a box that had been opened, but it is all boxed up. $4,000. That's a lot of money for a Mac SE that thinks it's all fancy. I know you SE30 people love them, but I'm gonna increasingly take a strong stance in favor of the regular SE because I never had an SE30. But it's pretty rare you get a like kind of new looking one, and especially when you see the back of it, a lot of times you can't tell how discolored anything from this era is, and when you look at the back, you got to look at the difference between like the label and the plastic. And looking at this one, it's pretty good.
Yeah.
So nice looking system. $4,000, but a lot of people have a bunch of money. So if you want one of these, here's a almost new-ish sort of one. Mm-hmm. Manufactured 1991. Paul, you going
to
buy it?
No, but it is kind of neat to see it all sort of like still packaged up like that. You know, all the pieces still together. I think the accessories thing isn't opened even. It's still shrink-wrapped.
Right. And then the computer is in this, showing the photo now, like, but it's clearly been like kind of opened and resealed up, I think. But you're right, the accessories box is still there. And I don't know. It looks nice. $4,000 is a lot of money spent on a classic Mac. But if you got it and you want to flaunt it, this is probably as nice of an SE30 as you're going to get. So there's that.
Although the capacitors may still have failed.
Oh, almost certainly they will. Welcome to the world of retro computing. There's only so many flavors of new we have to offer. Second choice I have, I think this is the second choice, but second choice I'm going to show you is an Apple II dust cover. And it's a weird one. It's for the traditional Apple II, and it's a vinyl-looking dust cover. It's fairly typical, and I like dust covers. I kind of miss dust covers. I'd like to make a comeback. It's kind of cool having dust covers on your computers. Weird thing about this one is the main pictures all show it with an incredibly orange logo. But then when there's a photo that zooms in on the logo, boom, full on red. Yeah. So I think it's actually red, and the color, the photos are messed up in these ones with the green background or something, and it's just overloading the camera or something, because it's kind of weird. Because it's described as having a dust cover with red apple on top. So I thought I wanted to point this out. It's $80. So, but it has no tears. It says no holes. No, it shows a photo on the underside. So it's pretty decent. I kind of like the not dark brown ones. Like, this kind of thing is something you can get. But anyway, it's cool.
I notice if you look at the last picture, like in the background of the green, there's a black and gold dress. Or wait, or is it blue and white?
Oh, yes.
I can't. Is that,
see what you're doing. No, there.
It's black and gold.
Yeah. So it's a dust cover. It's $80. It shows all the corners, though. Nothing's ripped apart, so it's in decent shape. Even the logo is not really cracked. Just the color is weird. So I thought some people might be seeing this on eBay and then scroll by because it looks incredibly faded in the initial color, the initial photo, rather. But apparently it is actually red. But it's still $80, so ain't cheap. And Paul will buy both of my first two choices, and he will also buy my third choice, which is an odd thing that has popped up. And I don't know if you guys know this. It's the Tauon, maybe it would be pronounced T-A-U-O-N, PC1. It is simply an Android computer. So it's a Android inside a keyboard. And as far as I can tell from the description, it comes pre-set up to play Timex Sinclair, Apple II, and some other retro computing thing. So it's just like a vintage computer all bundled. Not getting great reviews online from people who have already received them, saying it's a bit slow. And some people then yank the Android out of it and put in a Raspberry Pi. But it is a, like, as far as I can tell, you just get it and it's ready to play vintage computers. And some people might be interested in that kind of thing. And it's neat that it's a new player on the landscape. Have you guys heard of this thing before?
No. Not at all.
Not at all.
They have a whole bunch of listings popped up on eBay. So they got a bunch of, and it's all from the actual seller. This ST Sheep is the, there's also a, like, an official site for it. The advantage you're getting on eBay is, instead of being $79 buy it now, you can bid for as low as $19. So, and they have a whole bunch of options right now. So you might just pick one and say, okay, well, I'll take it for $20. And for $20, it's hard to see how wrong you would go.
Right.
It says it comes with, what were the ones? Oh, Amstrad. That was the other one. ZX Spectrum, Apple II, and Amstrad. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing I know about this is that it, you know, has been showing up on eBay, you know, so I've looked at these listings a couple of times and wondered, you know, whether this was something.
I mean, you could also just get a Raspberry Pi or get an Android and do this yourself.
It's just running emulators.
Right.
Yep.
On it's Linux just emulators. Or on Android. Same.
Yeah. And what was interesting with this one is a lot of people are online pushing, you know, Raspberry Pi, pushing Android things. But this pushes this as a retro computing solution. Like, even in the description, it's Apple, Spectrum, Commodore, Amiga, Nintendo, all in one computer for retro gaming. Like, this is positioned as a retro gaming thing. And I think that kind of makes it different, at least in its positioning. Or it could be that's simply how they smartly name the auctions when they stick them in the vintage computer section. I don't know. But it caught my eye because it's yet another way to play vintage computers. I don't know. I mean, the people buying it have given some reviews online, and everybody so far seems to say it runs very slowly. But how quick does it have to run to do Timex, like, Sinclair things? I don't know.
The keyboard looks horrible, I have to say. But I mean, as far as how, like, imagining how it feels, but I guess that's beside the point.
Yep. So anyway, that's it. You can maybe pick it up for as cheap as $20. Paul will buy five of them, and those are my auction choices.
Interesting.
Excellent. Let's see. So the first one I have, I just wanted to say this before I actually move to the auction, but it is a pin featuring Apple logo, which is this. And I just thought it was kind of fun.
Not the Apple logo, but rather Apple logo, the programming language. It's all in the pot.
I kind of like the design is nice too, but this kind of somehow makes me think of, like, Spaceballs, the lunchbox, or, you know, whatever. It's just kind of like generic Apple logo pin.
I like it though. I like the triangles going. Like, it's logo. It's if you know your turtle pin up, pin down language, it's logo.
You know, a turtle's been there.
It's turtles all the way down with Apple logo.
Yeah. Anyway, but so I thought I think it's a neat button in and of itself. It is a $5 starting bid.
I suspect it will go for more because pins normally do. But for $5, That'd be a steal.
Okay, let's see. The next one I have, I don't know. I don't know if this is interesting or not. It's, in fact, I don't even know what the Apple, you know, like this is a, the Power Macintosh 6500, I guess is what this is. So okay. The auction title says Vintage Apple Macintosh 6500. And there's, and.
But there's not one of those photos in the
It's
photos.
Actually pretty interesting. Like there's, well, so the photos show, it has all the, it has a lot of stuff, you know, it has like all the manuals and setup poster and CD-ROM discs. There's a keyboard and a mouse and a, and one of those microphones that you end up with millions of. I don't know if you have this experience, but
none of the photos show the actual computer.
Yeah, that's the thing. I was trying to remember, like, all right, well, what is the 6500? Because this is basically supposed to be like all the stuff that comes with the 6500. Has a TV video system with a remote that has a kind of like corroded battery compartment.
I hated the 6500. I did not like the look of it at all. I never used one. I just didn't like it from its look.
I don't know what it looks like.
Is that one that has the kind of it's a tower. Uh-huh. It's a like a, the size of a 8500 or an 8100 kind of thing. But at that slightly rounded top, it's not the tooth. I think that one that people would call. But it's could get a zip drive in the front of it. It's fairly generic from the late 90s era. So I think it was a.
Oh yeah, I'm looking at it. Yeah, I really didn't like the design of that.
It'd be like a 250 to 300 megahertz kind of thing.
It looks like a melted version of the square ones.
Okay. It's the definitive. It's like it would 100%. We don't even look at it. 100%. It came with the 603E. A whole range of computers that I didn't like from Apple came with the 603E. It seemed to be like that was the chip they'd put in it if I wouldn't like the computer. Mm-hmm. So I'm putting money down now to say it comes with a 200 megahertz 603E. I'm now going to Google it, but I feel strongly.
Yeah, let's see. Right. Let's bring up. So it's this thing. Yeah.
603E for the win, baby. That's perfect. But, up to 300 megahertz, so faster than I would have thought.
Okay.
So there was a 6400, I think, came before that. That was like the same thing, but without, I don't know. They're all kind of generic. It's from an era where it was hard to tell them apart. Mm. This would have had a Centris version, I think. Definitely would have had a, actually, no, the 6500 just comes as a Power Mac, but the 6400 came with the performer versions and the 9,000 different variants.
Perfect. That's what we need. But yeah, so I guess the thing about this auction that struck me was that they never put a photo of the computer in there at all.
Who knows?
So there's, you know, we've got a keyboard and a mouse and someone's knee and all the auxiliary stuff, but they didn't actually mention they didn't show the 6500.
But I don't think it's in there.
It's just this stuff for a 6500.
Yeah, because I looked at the description and it says this is a lot for the 6500. Up Functions is a lot for the Apple Macintosh 6500 computer.
So it's not.
Yeah, I would still assume it came.
Included in the lot is a keyboard and mouse and microphone.
Okay.
Also a set of CDs.
Okay, so maybe that's actually correct. Maybe I wasn't.
That's, man, you would assume the computer comes.
Yeah.
Because it should be then vintage Apple Macintosh 6500 stuff.
Accessories. Just, yeah.
Yeah, like, accessories are boo to this person. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Boo to you, ICCTP2, if you're listening live.
Not cool.
Yeah.
I don't like your computer, and I wouldn't have bought it even if it was in the auction. Yeah. So there.
Okay. But anyway, this reminded me a little bit of Garfield minus Garfield. I don't know if this is familiar to you, but
yes.
This is it.
Oh, yeah.
That's awesome. Those are classic,
I hadn't thought about this for a long time, but it is, it's basically just someone who takes Garfield strips and then kind of like edits out Garfield. So you just have often a bunch of like blank panels and then, you know, John Arbuckle saying something.
John says, it makes John look like a total lunatic.
Yeah. That's awesome.
This is the only acceptable form of Garfield.
Yeah.
To me. Yep.
Anyway. Okay.
That's great.
The next thing that I had is a Apple IIc color composite video and audio connector cable. And I just thought this is sort of interesting just in the fact that it exists. It's not a retro thing. It is, I think it's made by GDO Inventor, who makes a lot of this kind of stuff, little cables and power supplies and stuff, newly fabricated. But what it does is it plugs into the sort of audio video port, I guess, in the back of the 2C. But a couple of those pins, one of them is audio and one of them is composite, even though there's a bunch of other stuff, and a bunch of other pins there too. And so this just sort of isolates those out so that you can use them.
But aren't there already ports for those?
There are. So that was one of the things that I was wondering about. I wonder if there's anything better about the composite signal that's coming out this port Or maybe it just allows you to drive a second monitor.
Oh, right. Okay.
The two, I mean, the 2C has, it has, it doesn't have an audio out in RCA, but on the front, it has an 1/8 inch headphone jack.
I see.
Know, for the audio. But on the, I guess if you wanted to, people didn't typically hook up an Apple II to an external system. I guess this makes it slightly easier. And you're right. If it could be, yeah, like there's a video. He used to be called the iBook guy. There's a YouTube person now. He calls himself the retro guy. Or do you know who I'm talking about?
Nope.
Okay. Well, anyway, there's a guide on even the Amiga 1000 has composite out. Like he installed a small breakout that tapped into the RGB line, and it provided a much cleaner, you know, composite out. So it could be that there's a little electronics in there that makes it cleaner. I don't know.
I can see that. Yeah.
Because
there's that video. This is plugging into that expander port then?
That's yeah, the port was, like, it was used for like, if you're using it in Europe, I think there was a PAL adapter that plugged in there. And also that was the adapter that the Apple, the LCD, remember the Apple had a little portable LCD. And also I think Video 7 made a RGB adapter that plugged in there that you could hook up an like the Apple color RGB monitor too. So
cool.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Odd.
Yeah.
And it's $12. So what do you have to lose?
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway. Okay. Let's see this. I like this. The next one is world's slowest PC running at only 2 megahertz. And there's it's a nice little box. It actually has a little thing on the front that shows the megahertz and it reads 2. And there's a bunch of screenshots kind of demonstrating the veracity of the 2 claim. So there's a PC detailed informator, copyright 1995 FSMC, general info, Intel 486, general processor clock, 2 megahertz. This PC is running at 0.3 XT speeds.
That's hilarious. That chart is great. Look how slow this computer is.
This CPU is below the scale on the landmark system speed test.
So I guess if you've got like a DOS game, you just haven't been able to beat
it. Yeah.
Finally, this thing will let you beat anything.
But it was in fact specifically created to be slow. So this is the least I can do, says the thing. I cannot imagine a computer crawling slower than this. And so this is not, it's not that it shipped in this state. It's that this seller actually put this together to be slow.
I love that.
So it takes 50 seconds to reach system okay.
That's great.
Booting to command prompt in MS-DOS 6.22 takes 2 minutes and 52 seconds.
This is delightful. Yeah.
So I think it's a neat idea. I mean, it's a $220 starting bid. So yeah.
I like how in the description it says he specifically chose the 486 SX25 because it has neither clock doubling nor an FPU. Got the most crippled version of the 486.
Yeah.
This is awesome.
Anyway,
the graphics card is also a slow 256 kilobyte piece with enabled wait state for good measure. I'll show you. This is delightful. Yeah. What a glorious
option.
It's pretty good. Very impressive.
Okay. Oh yeah, I see. I came across this thing. It is the auction title is, I think this vintage CalKit item is for a Commodore computer, untested. And it's a little kind of like plastic thing that has a DE9 connector on the end of it. Nothing else, just this connector. Looks like it is mildly melted. actually, it isn't melted. I think what that is some sort of like epoxy or something. Because what it is in fact a dongle. It's a key, it's a software key for CalKit, which is a Commodore 64 kind of like business software thing.
Looks like a spreadsheet.
Yeah, so has spreadsheet and some other stuff. So I went off of eBay to find one example of this. This is CalKit being sold in the Mississauga region on Kijiji for $10.
Very, very close to...
Right, exactly.
Mississauga is attached to Toronto.
So in fact, that's why I wanted to put this in. So I think that you have.
Want me to go get that for you?
No, I think you need to, you need something to fill up your space, and there's probably nothing more suitable than a Commodore 64 spreadsheet.
Excellent. Yeah.
But
I can almost guarantee 2 weeks from now when we record again and you look behind me, there will not be a C64 right there. Like, I strongly feel it is unlikely.
I also found an ended auction on eBay for Kelkit. So the batteries included is the company that makes it. I think they made actually a number of things. And in this ended auction, there's a little photo of Kelkit. And on the disc sleeve, it says, "Attention, this program no longer requires a key for the joystick port." So I think what I can conclude from all of this is that there is currently a key for the joystick port for sale on eBay. There used to be a version of Kelkit that didn't actually need the key anyway, and the one in Ontario might need the key. So it could be that Carrington needs to get the key.
That's how Ontario rolls, man.
Anyone use Kelkit? I doubt it.
No.
And then I guess the last – no, not the last thing. Second to last thing is a little set of next coffee cup and what people always call a shot glass, although it is not made of glass. A shot cup.
This entire auction listing does not make a mugshot joke.
I know. I don't understand that.
Like, what? It's right there.
But I think these are pretty cool, actually.
Crazy that they didn't put this with a little thing behind it saying how tall they were and put like little numbers in front. Come on, you could have sold this for so much more with a creative auction. Mm-hmm. I might buy them and then relist it as mugshots. Next computer mugshot.
So this is a starting bid of $28, and that does not actually seem like very much. These are really nice. They have the kind of like – it's a white – they're both white with this sort of old-style Next logo on it, so a black cube with the color NEXT.
I would use this mug. I like this mug.
Me too.
I actually had this mug, and I lost it in the kitchen at one of my workplaces. Ooh.
How big is your kitchen?
At one of my workplaces. I forgot that I had left it in the sink or something, and it was gone. Sad.
Scrooge McDuck here. I don't know. I haven't seen that wing of the kitchen in years.
I like it, though. I mean, like, yeah, it's
oh, RCR bidding war.
Tempting.
Do it. Do it.
Okay. The next and last thing that I have is something that was sort of inspired by one of the posts that was on our Facebook page. David posted some photos of a mouse that had a little flip up top, and underneath it was a dialing keypad. But so I searched for mouse phone, and apparently there are mouse phones. Mice phone. So this is a mouse phone exactly for smart people. Technology making life easier. And it's a mouse with a dialing pad on it.
That's also a phone.
Yeah.
Oh, and it's got an RJ11 to plug it
it's
in.
It's an actual phone.
Oh, my God.
You just pick up and like you're Get Smart or something. This is amazing.
Do you pick up the mouse and talk? I saw the headset, but can you pick up the mouse and hold it and use it like a – does that little
– I hope so.
It looks like maybe the trackpad flips. Does it flip up?
I don't know that this one does. It might well require that thing, but I would love
I think you because it's
you hold it. There's no flip. At the bottom is a little microphone thing, and at the top
the buttons thing right at the bottom.
Is there a microphone at the bottom? Oh yeah, there is.
Yes, microphone has it. You're right. And the top between the buttons is the ear. Like you hold it up to your head.
Like hello,
talking on the mouse.
That.
I can't hear you. I've got a mouse.
That's very cool.
This is the most delightful thing you have picked in years.
Excellent.
I can't tell if cool is the word or...
Cool is the word. Yeah. I'll tell you how it is. I wanted this from my office.
Well, you know where it is. It is in Toronto.
Is it really?
And it would cost $500 to ship to me, according to this. You could probably just
come on,
pick it
up. It costs $500 to ship to me, too. How can it be in Toronto and it's $499.95 shipping to me?
I hadn't noticed that before just now. But,
wow.
What?
Yeah.
I don't...
Doesn't make a lot of sense.
Is there another Toronto, like in Australia?
A parallel Earth? Are you tapped into ebay.nothere.com? Like, wow. Anyway. Okay. But certainly, it must be a mistake. Somebody's typed it in. Or...
I love the sort of tagline, exactly for smart people.
Yeah.
Exactly.
The mouse phone is an innovative product combining the telephone and mouse. There needs to be more things like a mouse toaster.
Exactly.
So before we leave the eBay, I'll say I've spent the entire time that we've been going through eBay searching more on the Cantel computer. And I found that I didn't find what it was, but I found that, and I put a link in the show notes to this. There's a page. Cantel still has a website that's not SSL, and it looks pretty old, and it talks about corporate history. But they apparently made mini computers long ago, and I can't find out what this is, the 68,000 based one. But I searched for some of the chips on the board, and I found that there was a one chip, a CRT 9041, is a video attribute controller that's VT100 compatible. There is a UART, like a communications, UART controller, which would, sit in between the CPU and the serial port. There is a double row buffer chip, and there is a, a CRT 9007 is a video processor chip. So, I mean, it had a video port. Clearly, it's got some video hardware. So, I didn't figure out what it is, but it sounds like the VT100 compatible. I wonder if it was some sort of a terminal box that interfaced with the company's mini computers that they made. And I found that it looks like the year was 1973 that they list a operating system for the Cantel mini computer called BEST, the Business Executive System for Time Sharing, an OS. It was in this OS catalog of operating systems. So I'm going to guess that it's a CRT-less terminal type interface box. That's my guess.
Hmm. Okay. Cool. Well, it'll be interesting to know. It does turn out to be, maybe in the end, less interesting. But, we know.
So do we all.
That's all of our fate.
In the chats, I was trying to figure out what the right name would be for the PowerMac 6500, that awful looking thing. Christopher C. in the chat said laundry hamper, and that's exactly right. That's perfect. Well done. Yes, laundry hamper.
I, in fact, took a photo of a laundry hamper. It was because it looked like one of the cheese grater, like the old cheese grater.
Oh, sure, right.
Like I was in a thrift store or whatever, and there was a hamper shaped like that, and I just figured, all right, I must photograph this because it looks like a Mac. Also, people in the chat are saying
still run faster than a 603.
The 8-bit guy is the person that we were trying to remember.
Right.
We were talking about the holding the mouse up to your ear, and I actually just listened to this. I might have put this in my closing notes anyway, but it sort of fits in here. Panic, this company that we have talked about a few times, has a podcast now, and I've listened to a couple of them. The most recent one is called Totally Side Talkin', and it is about the Nokia N-Gage.
Oh, that thing. Talk about a failure.
So I didn't actually know much about this, but apparently one of the ridiculous things about it, and I'm actually not finding a very good photo of it, of the actual N-Gage here, but...
What about you, Paul?
It has all these buttons around like the outside. You hold it like
you held the edge to your face between your mouth and your ear.
Well, that's... Yeah. If you were going to actually talk on the thing, you end up sort of like sticking it out. Like it sticks out like you're, I think all the phone machinery is up kind of on the flat edge.
They're like this big, which, listeners at home, imagine I'm holding up a thing that's big. They're larger than you think, and you hold it like a pizza slice on the side of your head. So ridiculous.
So the Panic episode 5, Totally Side Talkin', sort of talks about, the plot here was essentially that this was this holding this thing up to your ear, like this, was so ridiculous that it became essentially a meme even before there were really memes. So there's like all these, like people would generate these photos of like people holding things up to their ear.
I remember this.
And so there was a site called, I think, Side Talkin', that actually would collect these photos, so because there's no Twitter to post them on, it would collect the photos that people would send in and arrange them in galleries and so forth. And and it turned out, so the Panic connection is actually this is cable site. that the Panic guy is actually the one who or like, you know, Panic co-founder is one of the ones who actually put this together. But anyway, so the Panic, I haven't listened to all of these. I've listened to these last couple. There's another episode on Audion, which we've talked a little bit about. And I think this is as far back as I've gotten, but I think the episode one is about the Goose Game, actually. Because Panic also is the publisher of the wildly successful Untitled Goose Game. I will use this opportunity to plug someone else's podcast, but take a look at that. Or take a listen to that, I suppose. It's pretty interesting.
Cool.
Okay. So that ends the discussion of the mouse phone, I guess, but
for now.
Okay. I don't know how long we've been recording for a while. So I guess we are at closing discussions. And so, I don't know, Blake, do you have any sort of closing thoughts?
Nothing revolutionary, I guess. I think I've been saying this every time, and it's shifted into overdrive. Obviously, I've been spending a little more time at the house, and so I'm, doing a lot more BBSing and IRCing and, trying to take advantage of... There's been a lot of online virtual museum tours, that kind of thing. I've been, doing some of those things to entertain myself. But, yeah, just... And a few little random retro things going on here and there. The subreddit r/retrobattlestations has contests that are happen every month or every couple months, and I feel like there's a couple that I've participated in. One currently is like Pizza Box Month, which is pizza box style. Systems like Mac LC kind of thing. And I don't recall what the last one, but that's fun to, highlight a machine or two in the collection. But, just going on.
Excellent.
Going on.
Carrington, do you have any thoughts?
I got nothing.
No thoughts.
Nope. I have no thoughts. I'm an empty void. I want to have my mouse up my ear when I speak now. I want that.
That
mouse.
Is very cool.
$500 shipping is outrageous.
Well,
I want more time alone. We're in the middle of a pandemic and everybody keeps making me do stuff and I can't just like even get a day to myself and it's driving me crazy. I'm not like going out and not social distancing, but I'm probably the only person in North America saying, God, I could use some more privacy. Want everybody else. Everybody else is freaking out. And so I feel like I'm having to be a caregiver for everybody who can't stand to spend 2 days alone in their own thoughts. And meanwhile, I'm desperate to spend a day not speaking to people. So that's how my quarantine's going. Not enough quarantine.
Well, good luck. Jack, how's your closing thoughts?
Yeah, no, I've had very little retro computing stuff, but I've been doing it all with my oceans of time that I do have all to myself. I have some projects like in the queue that need to be done, but I'll get to them. I have gone as far as hooking a few things up to my big TV that I bought a couple months ago. And like, it takes you back to, all the games I was playing on computers when I was younger. And I had, at most, I had like maybe a 19-inch color television I was plugging these things into, and now when you have like this 65-inch LCD, it's just like, oh my god! I wouldn't have dared to dream of such a thing when I was like 13 that would ever exist in my life. And then here it is. It's like, yeah, that's amazing. That's cool.
I was thinking the other day. First place I ever owned was a loft. Oh, actually, no, I rented it. I didn't own it, and it was a commercial place. It was just an old building that I was basically a squatter in. I had rented. I had to sign a commercial lease saying you wouldn't live there. I'm like, sure, I'm not going to live there. I just moved right in. It was just me and like homeless people squatting in the building. It was just complete squalor. And you could see the wooden slats on the floor and the ceiling. You could like see through them. Like people would drop stuff and it would go down multiple floors. It was crazy. But when I lived in this place, it was 1,200 square feet, 1,500 square feet of just one big room. Mm. And I had, I think, a 24 or 27-inch television that I must have sat 200 feet from or something ridiculous. And it was like, yeah, this is fine. I can see it. It's okay. And nowadays, you'd be like, what's happening? It was a little tiny thing. It's crazy. And at the time, it felt like this enormous television. I couldn't believe how big it was that I could just sit way over there. It's all good. And now I'd be like, that's not even good enough to be a computer monitor. I need six of those on my desk. Times change, man.
Yep. Yeah. It's definitely, I know that it's definitely weird to see some of these vintage things that I remember playing on the little screens blown up to, like, you know, whatever they are, you know, that size television.
Pixel.
I don't even know how many inches these TVs are anymore. They're just, you know, they're big. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I have actually still had kind of like a lot of work to do. So, I mean, like, I haven't had much time. But as I've mentioned before, I'm like largely, you know, sort of quarantined away from all my retro computing stuff, unlike everybody else. So, so there's not much here to operate with. But
I have my whole collection in the room behind me.
Yeah, yes, very good. How's the plant? Is the plant you've moved the thing?
The plant's dead. Plant is dead and gone.
Yeah,
I have the table it once sat on.
Very nice.
But I should get a little plaque in memory of plant.
Planty.
Poor Planty. Oh, don't even say that. My girlfriend, who lives in Canada, is totally a real person. We get a real Christmas tree every year, and I made the mistake of like naming the tree the first year. It was like this weird thing. I'm like, oh, poor little squashy. And then she didn't want to get rid of the tree because now it has a name. I'm like, it's 3 weeks after Christmas. It's dying. It's going to burst into flame spontaneously. Squashy's got to go. But now it's this thing where we have to name the tree, and then she never wants to let it go. Oh, it was a mistake. Such a mistake.
Yeah.
Don't name your plants, kids. Don't name your plants.
So, well, yeah, and if you have anything in the refrigerator or whatever that you don't think you want to eat, just start naming it. But very nice. Yeah. No, I mean, I think I've speaking of that, I have succeeded in my getting of grocery delivery windows a couple times. That's a thing now. That you have to sit there and
so that's a thing. You
have,
yeah,
to,
okay.
Have to sit there and keep refreshing. Like, you know, oh, there's a window. Oh, but by the time I click through, it went away again. That has happened several times where there's been a time, 2 to 4 p.m. or whatever. I'll click the button and then it's not there anymore when I get to like the next screen. So
you're hungry enough, you'd click quicker. Yeah,
so that's right. It seems I'm hoping that the sort of efficiency level. The adapting level kind of goes up because, I mean, like, it's rough. I mean, like, I really appreciate the existence of the people who are carting these things around. But at the same time, I would rather know that it's, you know, that my time is 6 days from now than to have to sit there and keep refreshing.
Right.
So.
Yeah. My wife has been very good at that. She, in the morning, like 6 o'clock is the beginning of the window for the people that we use, and so we've had I think every, you know, 10 days or so we've had a few. So that's makes things easier.
Yeah,
it's also just weird that's now a thing everyone does.
Mm-hmm. We've actually been doing that for almost 20 years. Like,
well, that's why she's so good at it.
Well, we didn't have to get up at crack of dawn and you know, hit the button like a machine, like e-sniping to get your grocery delivery. But
yeah, Paul, your eBay skills.
Yeah, they should point the eBay. Yeah, point your eBay sniper at it. There's a good business idea. Yeah. Actually, creating targeting the grocery items. But yeah, it's
actually that'll probably be a business. Now you say that, I bet you there's a service out there that says we do it. We hire some dude who's going to sit there and just we have a farm of people just click and refresh. When do you want?
Maybe
it?
Maybe I shouldn't.
There's going to be scalpers for this.
I shouldn't
have
said it out loud. I just go off and build my. Yeah.
Grocery scalping, wave of the future.
GroceriSnipe.com.
Oh, register. Yeah. Okay, domain chief. Right. Risha.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I'm trying to figure out a way to make a pun out of that. Parsnipe? I don't know.
Okay.
That's good.
But anyway. But yeah, so. Otherwise, I can see outside from here. All right. Is that everybody? I think that's all of us. I think we've closed our thoughts. So that's it for this show. You can find the show notes for this and all the RCR shows at rcrpodcast.com. You can discuss the show in the forums at vcfed.org/forum/forum.php. You can follow RCR on Twitter at rcrpodcast. You can join our Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/rcrpodcast. You can send feedback to feedback@rcrpodcast.com. We are a member of the Throwback Network at throwbackreviews.net. And write a review on iTunes. Why not? And until next time,
Retro Compute.